You're listening to Nubs, a podcast created by music geeks for music geeks. Brought to you in part by 44 North.
Hey, come on in. Welcome to episode 10 of Nubs. I am your host, Matt Diamond. I'm going it solo today. And this fine program brought to you by 44north.com. Today is a little bit of a special episode. And of course, if you've listened to the show before, that you know that I work for a rock radio station. And sometimes that gives me a bit of a connection to artists that I would not normally have. That being said, the format that I've worked in for a long time has been rock radio. So that's anything from classic rock to alternative rock, some of the up-and-coming stuff. And something that I have really enjoyed as far as that part of my job is watching bands kind of grow. Some of them come and they go. They fall off the map. They become one-hit wonders. Or some of them have blossoming, long-lasting careers and longevity in this business. And that is, it's kind of hard to come by in this day and age. But I will say this, today's guest is certainly a case of that longevity and strength within the music business. They are a band from Norwood, Ontario, who have basically taken over the globe. They're a huge deal overseas. They're all over rock radio in the States. And I am so proud and happy to say that I am friends with members of the band 3 Days Grace. Neil and Brad from the band, they are the respective drummer and bass player from this band. And you know what? I just kind of reached out to them. I said, listen, I would love to have you on the show. I'd love to have you come out and, you know, let's just talk. Just like a couple of guys knocking back beers and get caught up on what it's like to be in this band, some of the gear that you use, what you guys have been up to. And let's talk about some of the adventures of being in a band that is such a big deal as 3 Days Grace. And as I've said before, I mean, you might look at the landscape of some of the artists that I've had here on the show before, and you might think, wow, this is a little different than some of the artists or the groups that we've had on the show before. And that's why we're doing it, because I know that this is going to reach a wider audience, and I know that there are so many millions of fans of 3 Days Grace out there. And I wanted to give you kind of an inside perspective of how these guys live their life and just how laid back and cool they are. So today on Nubs, it's an introspective look at a band that I am so honored to have here in the studio today. Ladies and gentlemen, this is my interview, and a laid back one at that, with Neil and Brad of 3 Days Grace. All right, in studio. This is very, very exciting. We've been talking about doing this one for a long time, and I know that your fans are just squealing with excitement already, but I have both Brad and Neil from 3 Days Grace in studio tonight. How are you guys?
Doing great, man. We've got a little off time right now. It's we're having a blast.
And you were just in Cuba. You were in Jamaica. Life is pretty good for a couple of young rock stars like yourself.
Life is good. We got some downtime, man, which hasn't, you know, we have like a good 4 months off, which hasn't really happened since before Transit of Venus, so like 2012.
Wow.
So we've been going strong for
a long time. Have you got kids too?
Right. I got 3 boys.
You got three,
three boys.
So there's no downtime for anything again.
This is not vacation.
Yeah.
This is work. Yeah, being on the road's vacation.
Do you know, so here's a quick little connection here. Do you know that my aunt, who lives in Norwood with her, I think, yeah, she's married, so Ed. Do you know who Ed and Patsy are? Do you know this name at all?
Yeah, well, Patsy called me.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, like, so that's my aunt.
She's like, do you know Matt? I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. So there's that connection, and Ed's always saying, like, we got to get the guys out and go golfing all the time. That's his thing.
He loves
golf. He's a horse farmer, and he loves his golf. So he's always trying to, you know, he's always talking about the Walsh family and how we got to go out and golf. So as a favor, not only to my aunt for doing this, but we'll go golfing.
Absolutely.
All right? Get my ass kicked as usual. No big deal. And then, Neil, you've been cool enough. We've been talking, you know, keeping in touch. We've been talking about your exploits as far as doing DJ stuff and just like, you know, obviously with what the band is doing, because I work at the radio station where I work too. But we've always kind of had the text communication going back and forth. You just got back from a trip as well, and you got a family too. So
yeah, man. We were just in Cuba for a week, and now I actually have a place east of Peterborough, 10 minutes from where Brad is. And I've actually been tapping maple trees. And as we speak right now, I have a maple syrup boil taking place.
Ooh, very nice.
First time. I've never really done it. But I realize that to get a liter of maple syrup for some pancakes is an awful lot of work. It's an awful lot of work. I probably smell like a campfire right now.
Yeah, that's good, though. Like, it doesn't get more Canadian than what we're talking about right now. For anybody else that's listening, yes, we are good Canadian dudes. But it's funny, I talk about this with guests all the time, and how, we're going to talk about the evolution of the band and what you've been up to, but how the priorities and things shift, not only like as we get older. I don't know about you, I'll be 36 this year, and having a family, and how I downsized to move to this community. I love that fact of my life now, that it's not all hustle and like I'll go downtown for a show or go to Toronto for a show, but then come back. I like the quiet life. Do you guys find that you have a great balance or a contrast between being this huge, you know, monster of a rock band and then get to come and do stuff like this in Peterborough?
Definitely, man. You know, I think it's important to know where you came from. And I think it's, you know, it's all in our hearts. And a lot of us have moved back, you know, Matt's here and Neil's close now. And I'm in Norwood, and now just we have to get Barry here. But you know, I think home is where your heart is, and I think I couldn't imagine being anywhere else. And it's nice to come home off the road and just be surrounded by trees and nature and not loud music.
Right,
you know? it definitely relaxes you. I think so.
And is your spot on a piece of land like that?
I have like 17 acres, but it's it's nothing, like no neighbors or anything, lots of bears and coyotes and wolves and deer.
They all love your music anyway, I'm sure. And Neil, you got you said that like your weekend retreat is really close to here too, isn't it?
Yeah. So I live just down by Lake Ontario, just like straight south of here. But you know, it was always one of my dreams to own some property, you know, close to Peterborough where I grew up and where my family still lives and that. So I came across a little piece of heaven, and I've been there for about 4 years, and just you know, I'm a part-time lumberjack now, and
you're working on the beard. It's coming in full. I like it.
You know, I like to hunt and just be outdoors, and you know, that is like definitely has a calming effect on you. Especially, I mean, we just got back from Russia. We were just there we did Europe and Russia.
You guys ever been there before? You've done Russia before, haven't you?
Second time, yeah. Right. But we were over, like, this last tour was almost 6 weeks long. Mm-hmm. We've only been home for, 3 weeks now?
Yeah,
or something.
I sunk my teeth into you my claws right into you as soon as you get back. And you're like, oh, fuck, he wants us already.
We're also workaholics. So, you know, for us to be doing something to, you know, kind of work on... you know, just the future, writing, talking about the band and making future plans.
It's an investment. You're hanging out with me. It's an investment.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an investment. But do you find that when you unplug, do you guys really unplug, or this little spot that you have, do you have a studio there or a place that you
play? We're always working on stuff. It's funny, like, you know, we've been home, like I said, just 3 weeks. And then since then, Brad's been to Jamaica and I've been to Cuba and stuff. But the first thing we haven't seen each other in a couple weeks except for just like today. And immediately we're like, you know, I got this song idea. Like, well, I actually have this song idea too. That's cool. We'll play this. And it's like we're already writing as soon as we get together.
Well, it's how it started too. It's not like it would be foreign to you to think that, like, it would probably be fucking weird if you guys got together after a month and you're like, I haven't done any music at all. You know, like, it's kind of what has propelled you to the place where you are right now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, space is good too, you know, being together for so long and you get to, you know, separate and go your own way and write, you know, some ideas. And then that's kind of how we work. You know, we all bring ideas to the table and collaborate. And that's kind of what makes 3 Days Grace, you know, and it's exciting to us. So
how long have you guys been, like, I don't want to do the wiki thing here, like go to the bio. How long have you guys been like doing what you're doing now officially? It's 2016 now.
Yeah, it officially started on the third day of grade 9.
That's a little while ago.
1992.
That's just a little while ago.
Yeah, it's been 23 years, Matt.
Dude.
basically, like, I sucked at football.
Right. Where'd you guys go to high school? Did you guys go to high school together?
Adam Scott.
Went to Norwood. I went to Norwood High. Yeah.
Nice.
But it was like I was gonna ride the pine as a football player. I needed to, you know, find a way to get chicks in grade 9, and I figured I should get a band together. And
mission accomplished.
And then I met a bunch of other people who wanted to get a band together, and we put the band together. I happened to live at the time like 30-second walk from Adam Scott, so we'd go and rehearse at lunch.
Do you still see people from there all the time? Like, especially if you come back here or whatever, do you ever walk down the street and you're like, oh shit, there's Chris or whoever?
Oh yeah. No, yeah. Especially, you know, pop into the pig's ear. And
weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Cool, but weird. It's funny too, because I know so many other people that have a connection to you. My Aunt Patsy right. for one or whatever, you know, but when I'll talk about those things and that, and everyone's always trying to push like to get you guys back here. Your last official show with Adam was in Peterborough at the venue
yeah.
too, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So three of them. Yeah.
So when you think of that, the evolution as to where you're at now, of course, with, you know, with Matt being part of the band or mm-hmm. whatever, is it weird to look and see the kind of journey that you guys have been on now as to this last record, how the band has evolved? Is you ever have that pinch me moment where you're like, what
sure,
is
yeah.
going on?
I think so. You know, I think this last 3 years with Matt have been our busiest, you know, one of our busiest times. That's 3 Days Grace. And we've been to places we've never been before, like Russia twice and Europe. We've been yeah. to Europe, you know, a few times and playing to a lot of different fans that we've never played to. And I think it's been a crazy ride, you know, but it's been amazing how it has evolved, and the momentum is nonstop. You know, it just keeps going. So it's we're pretty fortunate, and we're lucky to have a guy like Matt around, and it's been awesome, man. It's been a trip.
You know, I think that as far as even the people that work within the media or radio, I think everybody is like, not only were we always rooting for you after, you know, you like, let's face it, man, a band loses its lead vocalist. Mm. It's a pretty big deal.
Sure.
You
yeah.
know, you don't want the Gary Cherone moment where Van Halen is scratching their head.
Yeah,
no. But I think everybody within the media, let alone within, you know, your own backyard, was always rooting for you regardless. Mm-hmm. Do you find that not only you kind of came out on top with Matt doing this now, but that you kind of surprised yourself?
Was yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what for us, we've just like, we've always kind of agreed in the band that life is really short and life is about chapters, and like a new challenge is an exciting thing. And that was certainly a new challenge for us to rise to the occasion. And but we just didn't think about it too much, didn't get too freaked out, and got really focused on making the best album we could. And you know, but also deciding to kind of go back to our roots as far as songwriting and as far as the vibe of the album. And so we made a very emotionally charged, you know, lyrically dark, musically heavy album that was, I think, reminiscent of what we did in the beginning. So, mm-hmm. And that coupled with the fact that, you know, Matt being Brad's younger brother and having grown up with us, and actually he was a co-writer on early 3 Days Grace, which is something a lot of people don't know. You know, he was the not only the natural choice, but really the only choice for us. And it just kind of like the stars aligned, and we just mm-hmm. started working. And like the first show, his like debut was in front of 8,000 people in like Pittsburgh or something.
Yeah.
And he just came out guns blazing, and like we looked at each other like, man, here we go.
Everybody looked at each other and went, thank God.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's an adventure, and that it was actually kind of like, in a weird way, like really fun to just say, fuck it, let's just go. And you know, it definitely helped that we wrote Painkiller shortly after Matt joined the band, and we just recorded it and put it out just because.
You guys serviced that as a single before the record was even done.
Yeah, like we didn't even have the record
like
written.
Yeah, year and a bit.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
It, like, shot up the charts and went to number one. So we were just like, it was kind of a, you know, it was like a, it was a moment of like, you know, really, you know, confirming what we had already felt, that it was the right move. But it was kind of also fuck you to the haters a little bit.
Yeah, man.
And just
absolutely,
like,
yeah.
you know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Finally having a little brother paid off, eh?
It's yeah, like it did, finally.
Yeah. And it's not like he didn't have any chops as far as being out and playing in front of people, but, My Darkest Day is a little bit of a, it was a good warm-up for him.
They had a great run in the States, man. They had a number one song and, you know, sold a bunch of records, and it was just timing. The timing was perfect, and, you know, fate's a funny thing.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Things happen for a reason.
Sure.
I'm a firm believer in that. I just got to ask you, you guys ever talk to Mr. Gonche at all?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I text him once in a while.
And he's still doing a solo thing.
Still
and,
doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's got ties to the city as well, obviously.
Sure
he's
he
got
does.
It's so funny to think of the small town Ontario and how, you know.
Oh, it's weird, yeah.
Yeah, I love it, though. You know, like I said, just being here and being able to do stuff like this is kind of, I wouldn't have been able to do this if I went to the big market.
Well, that's it, absolutely.
And the labor of love. This show here is all about, you know, we call the show Knobs for obvious reasons.
I've been called a knob.
This is why we all get along so well, right? And our good friends at Boss and Roland have come on board to kind of support the show, and I was really, really relieved because I was looking at all the gear breakdown and the stuff that you guys have as far as some of the stuff that you use. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to look at not only like the stage setup, but the studio setup and the evolution of that. When you guys first started, tell me about the gear, what was might have been in your pedal train. Then we're going to move over to Neil's kit because, you know.
It's funny you say that because I think the first time we played for, like, anybody important in the record business or music business, It was Gavin Brown, and the first thing he said is like, go to the Steve's Music downtown Toronto,
right across from the Horseshoe.
Buy a fucking Boss tuner.
Yeah.
Because you guys are so out of tune. So that was our first pedal, you know, and that's I tell bands all that all the time, you know, like, what, you know, live bands that just Boss tuner, man.
Yeah, it should be.
That's your first
the white
pedal.
Chromatic
that's
tuner it, that is a must. Even if you're like you are an awesome guitar player, everybody has to have that in their chain.
There's a classic slogan in Nashville that exists mainly in like writing songwriting rooms and stuff. It's be in tune and on time.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's figuratively and literally, you know, the best thing that any band could ever have. In fact, it's funny, we had Nick Harmer from Death Cab for Cutie on the show too, and he was saying the same thing that way back in the day. It was like the first person that ever worked with him was just like, you got to go get a tuner.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. Some bands don't get that, or they think that they're in tune until somebody else is playing with them that is, and then they're like, oh, I don't know. But as far as the effects go, I mean, it's no secret you guys are a hard band. You know, do you remember some of those signature sounds being different than what they are now?
Well, I think, you know, especially when you're in the studio, you kind of experiment with different pedals, and that kind of translate live. So, our setup now is pretty intricate. You know, it's a lot of MIDI going on. Like, you know, for myself and Barry, we have racks and racks of pedal effects and everything's programmed into a MIDI controller, and we just kind of pick and choose what sounds we want to go together.
Right.
And it's a great system.
See, I wondered this. Yeah. Do you still have to hit your own effects, or do you have a guy that's on the road?
I still do it my own way.
Yeah. Because there's have you seen It Might Get Loud? You know this you know this Jack White. The Edge and that other guy from Jimmy Page there, but you know that little dude. But the fact like that all of their rig and everything is from underneath the stage or whatever, and that like the Edge's pedal setup or whatever is worth like $1 million, right? And there's some guy that's like, you know, at the side of the stage that's like, okay, and at this part we're gonna hit this, and then he looks like the star, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Sometimes I'm not dissing the Edge right now, you know. To each their own.
You can, by the way. It's okay. I don't know if he's going to be listening to this show.
There's a certain like limit to where I think that if you go too far, maybe you're cheating the system a little bit, the rock and roll system.
Sure, yeah.
There's so many bands. I mean, we get to see it from a unique perspective, being backstage at festivals and stuff. Mm-hmm. How many bands have a computer guy that's basically running, like it's like, I hear a tambourine, but I don't fucking see a guy playing a tambourine right now. Like, we've always been sort of anti that, and we'd rather be a little rough around the edges, because rock and roll is supposed to be dangerous and rough around the edges.
And, you know, sometimes mistakes are the best part, you know, whether or not you're recording or not, or something that kind of like falls apart live, and then you're like, oh, whoa, see how we recovered from that. You know, you kind of lose that. Like, are you a click track guy? Is there a click track stuff in it?
Sometimes I do it because I find that when I'm singing, guys sing a lot of the backups. If I'm singing something that has a lot of syllables in it, I will speed up.
Sure.
If I sing something that's long and drawn out, I will slow down.
Sometimes, dude, I talk for a living. Sometimes I'm like, I should have a click track on right now. You get lost in an interview and shit. The phone rings and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, but it's just like, you know, to what extent do you... I mean, the thing, it's kind of sad that a lot of fans probably don't even realize what they're hearing, but they're hearing like recorded music and, you know, someone dancing around.
Has there been one band that you guys have been like, oh my God?
Oh, there's
we don't name names
on
that.
There's a good handful of bands, trust me.
Really?
You know, it's always funny, like, when you see a band and their Pro Tools rig goes down and they have to cancel the show. You know, it's happened many times.
Yeah. Really?
Canceling shows because someone spilt a beer on the laptop or some bullshit.
It's just disgusting.
What did they do originally? You know, like
to get
started.
Flip burgers.
Yeah, but like if you were in the jam room, it's not like anybody originally when you first got together was like, okay, why don't you like launch that MIDI track over there and we're going to, you know, like.
It totally takes the honesty out of rock and roll, and I hope to hell we never ever go that way. And
I don't think you will.
I don't think we ever will.
Like, let's face it. How do I say this without sounding like a complete dick? How much bigger could you really, really get from this standpoint in your career?
Are you
right
talking
now,
about like, okay, so I've had a few burgers. What do you get? Oh, you're talking, success.
No, not physically. You guys both look pretty fucking good, actually. No, but I mean, like, when it comes down to that, like, how much bigger could you get in order to sell your soul from the things that originally got you here?
Yeah.
You know?
I think that we're at a point, I mean, it's, you know, you get to a point where you're fortunate enough to say things like this, but... It's really not about, you know, it's not about the money and the success as much as it is waking up excited about what you're going to do. The traveling is amazing.
Yeah.
We just like dude, since January, we've been to 12 countries, you know?
Yeah.
And not only do we get to go to 12 countries, but we can go and, like, you know, our careers have really grown in these countries where, like, we'll go to Prague, Czech Republic, and sell 5,000 tickets. We'll go to Moscow and sell 8,000 tickets.
Like, you couldn't have done that 10 years ago, you know, to go into that country, really.
A lot of it's the power of the internet. And I mean, you know, the success is amazing. It's cool to have that level of success and do that, but we're not over there going like look at all the coin. It's like it's like, man, like, who can say that they're in Kazan, Russia, playing in front of 3,000 people that are singing every word to every song that don't speak any English?
It's totally bizarre.
Yeah, I've always thought about what that would feel like, not only just to, like, walk up the stairs before you get on that stage, but to see what's the biggest number of people that 3 Days Grace has ever played in front of in one shot.
Recently. Oh, man.
Well, we played some festivals opening for Metallica last summer in Europe, like in Italy, in Milan.
Yeah.
And then we did Heavy MTL with Metallica.
Yeah.
Each of those was like over 50,000 people. And then in 2006, we opened for the Stones in Saskatchewan, two shows, and that was 50,000 people.
There's some big ones in the States too. There's a few big, big festivals. Like, I think Kansas City's like 60,000. You know, we've headlined that one before, and it's, you know, it's fun.
Is there a point where there's so many people that it's unrealistic, like that it doesn't feel real?
Yeah, it doesn't feel real. It's easier the more people.
Yeah.
Because you're picturing that one dude in the back that's taking too much acid or whatever. And he's kind of listening, but so you start playing for that guy.
He makes you feel better.
Can screw up right now, and that guy tripping on acid isn't even going to know.
Yeah, it's a lot different when I'm playing acoustic guitar by myself on stage at an open mic, and there's three guys, and they're all just yelling at me to play Neil Young or Standard.
Yeah, They're waiting for their turn to get up there.
Exactly. So
they're the ones critiquing.
And you know what, man? They never bring their own guitar. They always want to play my guitar. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
You know? As far as the gear goes, okay, so what was the very first guitar that you when you first started playing Bradley?
Man. Very, very first?
Yeah.
I had a Samick.
Nice.
Four-string bass. And from there, I moved up to a G&L, which was like a baby blue beauty guitar.
Yeah.
And then I went to Ernie Ball, Music Man, from there, and haven't really looked back.
Do you get a sponsorship deal through
those
guys?
Yeah. They sponsor me, and it's awesome, because it's every record cycle I get, you know, four or five new basses, and it's great for the studio too, because they're amazing.
How many have you got kicking around? What do you think?
Oh, I don't know, 25.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we got a jam.
I've scammed a couple that he's completely forgotten.
He wouldn't know anyway, dude. He doesn't know where they are.
They're in my basement somewhere. That's all I know.
That's awesome.
No, and it's cool, man.
And as far as you know, like any of that outboard or the pedals or any of that kind of stuff too, you know, because I saw that in the list or whatever, is there a constant flow of things that are always being dropped off to you? Hey, try this, you know, go with this.
Yeah,
kind of stuff?
Yes and no. I think pedals are a little different. You know, I do have a few Boss pedals. I have a Boss Overdrive and a Boss Flange and something else too. I have a few, like Micro Synth is a big one for me, and Sans Amp.
Yeah, those are great.
I use that combo quite a lot.
I actually use I have a Boss RC50
that I use for
like my drum solo.
Yeah.
Where I can, like, I have a electronic pad and I've got
that you trigger stuff with.
Yeah, I can trigger stuff with it, but then I have that running through the Boss, so I can actually trigger stuff and then loop it through the Boss.
It's awesome.
And then I move over to the drum kit and I can play to the Boss and I can stop and start it and stuff like
Sweet.
That. Sweet. Yeah. it's pretty, like, good stuff about that. That stuff is, like, really roadworthy. Like, you can, like, stomp on it, and you can tell the difference with, especially pedals, stuff that's meant to be, like, stomped on and had beard spilled on, and then the other crap. And,
as opposed to some of them now are going, you know, not to bash another company, but some of them have gone plastic, and I'm like,
really?
If you were wearing a heavy boot, like, you'd step right through that thing, you know?
Wow.
And it's funny to see how, I don't know, man, this is me, again, getting a little bit older, how, you know, they just don't make it like they used to anymore, you know? When you talk about the very first, you know, lineup or at the beginning of the band or whatever, what was the very first kit that you played there, Neil?
Oh, I had
because now you've got the, like, I look, and now it's almost the
I have
the pure space thing going
spaceship
on.
Spaceship.
Yeah.
It actually hovers above the stage.
That is cool. Yeah, you and Tommy Lee, man, roller coaster drum kit, no big deal.
I had a Westbury drum kit. Now, I mean, I'm all a Yamaha guy, but
you had some Tamas back in the day.
I had the Tamas.
Right? The Rockstar.
I had the Rockstars in the wine red.
Oh, man, that's a beauty.
Now I have a set of Yamaha. They're cocaine white.
Nice. Yeah, did we say that? China White?
But no, I had the Roto Toms. I used to worship Neil Peart, so
beautiful.
I had the Roto Toms.
He just pulled the plug on the tour, on touring now. He's done.
Did
That's
he?
It. Yep, he's not doing it anymore.
Wow.
He says that he's all beat up now, his arms and everything are
really?
All fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
But we'll talk about him later. That's fine. Now
I play double kick, like actual two kick drums. I've always kind of had a double kick pedal up there, but I just actually switched over to two separate kick drums just in the last year. I like it way more.
Really?
Yeah, it's easier to play.
What's the size of those?
They're just 22s.
Yeah.
22, and then I have like 10, 12, 14, 16 toms. Snare, whack of cymbals, and if you go online, actually there's somewhere online, maybe I can send you the link or something.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, man.
Yeah, like there's a Yamaha let me go in and actually just build my dream drum kit in the warehouse, and I could just pick from anything that I wanted.
Is that like in a video game? You're like, okay, pick this color, that's going to go, so you got to pick the hardware, everything.
Absolutely, yeah, my drum tech who lives in Montreal came out for a few days, and we just like had the one run of the warehouse, and just picked whatever we wanted to, and then we actually took a camera, we time-lapsed it, so it shows like the full building of the kit over a course of a couple minutes.
So by the time that you left there, like, were you there while they were hollowing out whatever they had to do, and then, you know, like, you got to see the robot build your...
Pretty much, we kind of sent in a wish list ahead of time, and then they had a big pile of stuff, and then we rolled in and just like built whatever we wanted to, and we had some hacks. We customized it all right on the spot, and people can check it out on YouTube. It's pretty
awesome. Cool. Okay, we'll put that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, very neat. As far as like your, I know that's kind of like the signature Neil Sanders. What would that model be called? Have they rolled it out yet? You called it the cocaine white Neil Sanderson
actually,
custom?
That kit is actually Silver Sparkle.
Okay.
Right. So I don't know. Call it. Call it Lucille.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Yeah, it shines, man. I like it. Is there something that only you have, and we'll ask you as well, but is there something that only you have that nobody else has that is a part of your setup? I like to ask this because some people will use something even like a, you know, if they got something that might be like a circuit broken, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, has there been something that you have used on stage?
For a lot of years, my mom, my late mother actually bought me a, like just back when I was 10 years old, bought me a drum throne, a stool.
Okay.
And over the course of a lot of years, I used to sit so high that the stool actually bent backwards. So it was like a reclining drum stool.
No.
And I got so used to that. This is back when 3 Days Grace started touring, that I could not sit in any stool except for that stool. So wouldn't matter what gig we were playing, where we were going, we were flying with my drum stool that my mother bought for me.
You're like, we can't leave the country until that thing
shows
up. Oh,
for sure. I couldn't sit in any other drum stool except my bent back reclined Gibraltar. And then as I got older and realized that it was actually doing permanent damage to my lower back, I finally made the switch. But that stools at my, it sits behind my drum kit at home.
So you still have it?
I still have it.
Just like that. See, she's still with you everywhere that you go,
sure.
Brother.
Yeah, man.
What about you? Have you got something that is just kind of like...
Nothing too crazy. I think I still have, and I still play, you know, for half the set, is my first bass, one of my first basses I ever bought, and I took out a loan to buy it. When 3 Days Grace...
Probably pay that off now.
I think I paid it off. Yeah, I went to PC Bank and got a loan and went, and that was my first Ernie Ball, and I still play it, you know, half of the set. So
that's cool.
That's definitely my baby.
That's cool that you haven't forgot about those things where you started, you know, whether it be the Samick or the Ernie Ball. Mine was like a, what was it, like a Destroyer or something like that.
Nice.
I forget what it was, but... if we talk about in studio stuff and how the difference is, because the last record was Gavin as well, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And have you guys talked to Gavin lately? Are you already talking about doing pre-prod stuff with him?
We're not there yet, but Gavin and I talk all the time.
Yeah.
I actually, you know, I do some co-writing outside the band, and so I actually work with Gavin on stuff that he's got going on currently.
Sweet. You still got the beard?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
so
yeah. That's a permanent installation.
I hope so.
Yeah, for sure. No, he's awesome. Yeah, we just kind of take one day at a time, and like with 3 Days Grace, our focus is like we write. The time spent writing is exponentially more than the time spent recording.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're not quite there yet. We like to have a massive body of work before we even start to record stuff. But But you know what? You know, Gavin's great in that he's got all these. He's got tons of like old classic gear, and he's like, he looks like a mad scientist when he starts hooking them all together, and gets this grin on his face when he's getting some sort of analog sound that he loves, and it comes from just like old gear and experimenting, and that's one of the beautiful things about recording, is it's just one great big experiment.
How involved are you with it? Because of course we're talking about production and on stage and studio. How involved is the band as far as that goes? I know, like, you got a song, you go in. Is there ideas that you feel free that you can say, hey, we're gonna do this? And then are you, you know, pardon the term, instrumental in the actual production of your record?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're there 24/7, man. You know, we love it. We love being in the studio, and I think it's definitely our passion. You know, is to be involved, and it goes with everything. And we're involved in our artwork, and you know, we're pretty involved all the way around. Mm-hmm. You know, with everything that goes on in 3 Days Grace. So, yeah, I think that's the fun part, is the experimenting part, and just trying new things. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
You know, I just know from my minimal experience of being in a studio, how cool is it when you're like, remember that riff we came up with? Now listen to it.
Yeah,
you know, and you hear how huge and balls to the wall everything is now. With a guy like Gavin, how many records have you done with him now?
We've done two.
And then
he was actually a pretty big part of 1X as far as the songwriting and the development and stuff. But we've done two with him, and I've actually saved all of our demos and all of our like just voice memos and like just little, you know, nuggets of ideas. Mm-hmm. So I can go back, I can find like the birthplace of a lot of riffs that are now 13 years old.
No way. Like the master archive. Oh, there's fans out there.
I'm just hanging on to
right
all
now.
That stuff in case there's a big lawsuit someday.
Yeah.
Yeah. When someone comes back and says, you know,
I wrote that back in 73.
When Tom Petty comes and says, hey, Danny California sure sounds a lot like.
Exactly.
You know, right.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think you're safe. Is there something as far as the direction for the next record? By the way, the last one, it is still crazy because we were just talking about how that came out. You got, you know, the number one right off the bat with that. What were the final like sales as far as that goes? Are you guys doing the Junos?
We're actually up for a Juno this year.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
That's group of the year. We, you know, which is going to be, it's going to be a great time regardless. I always love going out there.
Where is it?
It's in
Ottawa?
Calgary.
Or Calgary. Yeah, that's right. Okay, Calgary this year.
Yeah, I mean, the record was like, major success in the U.S., man. Like, I Am Machine, actually, which was the second single, it was a huge hit down there.
Yeah.
It was even bigger than Painkiller, really important song for us. Like, we've been leading off our sets live with it, and people just go totally bananas.
Sweet.
And then, you know, Human Race was the next single that, like, that's definitely one of my favorite things that we've done. It was a departure for us, and we shot a video for that song. I think it's the best video we've ever done.
Yeah,
it was
definitely.
Really, it's cool. Disturbing and beautiful at the same time, and just kind of really is like, just kind of represents a number of people from a number of different walks of life. And, you know, maybe I can send you the link for that, for Human Race video.
Yeah, well, I remember you and I talking about something completely unrelated at the time. And you're like, So by the way, when are you going to add my fucking song, man? Like, when are you guys going to add it? And I was like, dude, it's so good. The whole record is really good too. But I've always been, you know, trying to keep up to date, not working in radio. Mm-hmm. People always be like, this is the next single. And I'm like, oh, really, man? Because if you're familiar with the record or whatever, everybody's going to have their own taste, and you see how a producer is going to step up and say, this should be the next single. Are you guys instrumental in choosing whatever singles are the next one? You get to choose that 100%?
Yeah, we work with our team. You know, obviously everybody has their own opinion, but we're a big part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Where will you record the next one?
I don't know.
Not really sure, man.
Where was that one? Remember, I think it was for 1X, I think. Remember when you guys did like that party downtown and you had all the fans come in at the studio? What was that studio again? That was...
Was that for Transit? No,
it was the one right after that, I think. Oh, maybe it was for Transit.
Was that Revolution?
It was Revolution. Studios, now, did Geddy Lee have something to do with Revolution back in the day?
He's a part of it or something?
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember walking
He played
walking
a lot of bass on the album, actually.
Yeah.
No big deal. He never got a credit for that.
I had a nap when Geddy came in.
He got the ghostwriting credit. It was some guy named Freddie. No big deal. Freddie Lee. But I remember going into that studio, and you guys actually tracked, was the entirety of that record tracked there?
Transit was there, yeah. That's right.
And that was a pretty neat, just to have that interaction with your fans and literally have people there. I remember there was some girl that won because of the station that I used to work for, and she was like, dude, she was trembling. Like,
really?
Oh my God, there they are. And I'm like, really? No. But how important is that to you to be able to have that that one-on-one, that connectivity with the people?
It's always been like pretty much the first priority for us, you know? Yeah. Like, we wouldn't be here without the fans. You know, we live in a world where fans want to feel like they're kind of like at arm's length with the artists that they love and stuff. So we really interact and engage with fans, and you know, social media allows us to really do that on a grand level.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, it's super cool, especially like just having got back from this Russian tour. I don't know how, but like every airport, every train station, every hotel that we went to, there were at least 200 kids out there.
No way.
And, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. And they're not just like, they're not just looking for autographs. They bring you like, they've like
muffins
drawn,
and shit.
Drawn pictures, muffins, a lot of vodka.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like vodka and chocolate.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Vodka, chocolate, drawings, and like muffins, but they're, you know, they're like, it's a different type of muffin over there.
Yeah, special muffin.
A Russian muffin.
How was, okay, here, and I'm going to let you guys go real soon here, but real quick, what's been the weirdest fan encounter? Because we were just talking about off mic or off the recording here, but the cruise that you're on, there's like a little too accessible to the fans. Has there ever been a real, everybody's got to have
there's
the
that,
one crazy
There's that
story.
One lady, I can't remember her name, but like she has been, she's
oh,
seen
yeah,
us in
yeah.
Florida.
Yeah.
She's seen us in Canada. Like she's shown up at our shows, like just like
yeah, she's everywhere.
But she like scales fences and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and then we saw her
weird
in Poland.
Is she
and we're
no.
like, is that who
yeah.
I think it is?
Yeah.
And she was yeah, she was scaling a chain link fence, to climb backstage in Poland. As it turned out, she didn't even need to climb the chain link fence because the fence like ended like 10 feet the other direction.
Yeah, right.
And we're like, we were just sitting there outside the bus.
Yeah.
We're like.
Is that
is that who I think it is? You know, scaling that fence over there?
It's not like it's like fucking Brad's mom.
Yeah, right.
It was bizarre.
The bizarre part, which got to be a little bit much, is that she always stood in front of me every show.
And just glared at you the whole time.
She's a sweet woman, and I wish her well, and I'm sure we'll see her again.
I'm sure we will,
but,
too.
But, yeah, she saw a lot of shows in a lot of countries.
Yeah. You know, Florida to Poland is a little
yeah, it's a
weird.
Little bit much.
That is, I was going to say, that's a little extreme, but I totally get it. You know, and even if you don't see her, I'm sure she'll be seeing you. That is a little creepy.
Yeah.
In closing, I know that you guys got lives and stuff. What's next? So I know we're talking about
I
got
to
like,
go stir the syrup.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, quite literally.
Huh? Yeah, not much, man. We're kind of just, you know, we're in writing mode and I'm going to go to the Junos. And then we actually do have a fairly busy summer. Like we're going to Japan for 2 weeks and playing a couple shows.
You've done that before? You've been there
yeah.
before? Yeah.
Long yeah, we're actually ago, playing yeah. for yeah. on U.S. Marine bases.
Whoa.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, we're doing Pearl Harbor on July 4th in Hawaii, which will be a trip.
Yeah.
On July 4th?
Yeah,
it'll
be a big
oh
party.
It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'll
weird.
That'll be kind of cool.
And then yeah. a lot of, we have like some fly-in festivals, American festivals through the summer, kind of just weekend stuff where we'll get on a plane on Friday, mm-hmm. play Saturday night and be home.
Yeah.
But, you know, which is cool. It's a good time of year to do that because between now and then we'll probably write a lot of stuff. So when we see each other 10 or 15 times in the summer, it's like we can share all the ideas mm-hmm. we've been working on. Mm-hmm. We can jam out some ideas during sound check. And
you can kick the guy's ass who only has one little idea as opposed to the other that brought 5 or 10 to the
oh, yeah.
table.
Yeah, exactly.
Pull up your socks, dude.
Exactly.
No big deal.
Yeah, man. So, you know, I think 2017, we're going to have a record ready to go.
Yeah.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In closing, real quick, Neil, your very first musical memory.
Was definitely when we were at a garage sale. And there was like this Bonapi like keyboard that you plugged in, and I wanted it, and my mom bought it for me.
Nice.
That's what started everything.
Was there a Bonapi keyboard? Was there one song that you remember hearing either at home or on the radio that you were like?
Yeah, as far as songs, it was definitely my brother playing Zeppelin in his bedroom.
Sweet.
There was something about just the drums and the space of the music that I didn't understand why it was different than anything. And now I do.
Cool. Brad, what about you, bro?
Probably, I remember my neighbor lent me, you know, before I even knew what music was or, you know, rock and roll, 1984 Van Halen. And I remember playing that over and over and over and over, and I think I wore the shit right out of
yeah,
it. But that was my first record where I was like...
Was it a record or was it a
it
tape?
It was a record that I converted onto a tape.
Nice.
You know, and put in my cassette player.
Cupid smoking a butt on the cover of 84.
Such a great record.
Oh,
that was
dude.
The first... rock record that I was like, holy shit, man, this is
yeah.
amazing.
Just changed it for you, just
yep.
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, even from sitting on this side of the table and to be able to not only share those experiences with you guys being on the road, but the very first time that I ever figured out that I wanted to do what I do mm. too. And this beautiful connection that we've made, you know, from the artist and to be able to try to, you know, promote and put your stuff out there. You guys have always been so accessible, not only to your fans, but to schmucks like me that do this. To guys like me that couldn't make it in music and then just talk about music or whatever. But you guys have always, you know, really made yourselves accessible. And I really thank you for your time tonight.
Yeah, thank pleasure, you, man.
And when we get the next one done, and if there's anything else that I can do to help to, you know, be the crazy person, maybe peeling the woman off of the fence in Poland, I'll be that guy for you. I will. Awesome, I'll always be there for you boys.
Thank you.
Right on, brother.
So we appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the show. So great of those guys to pop on by the studio today and have a chat. And if you're a big fan of that band, expect to see and hear big things from 3 Days Grace within the next year or so, doing the summer festival circuit and then coming back to us hopefully with a brand new record very, very soon. Okay, upcoming guest on the show. Very, very excited for this, as I have been a lifelong fan of a band by the name of Grizzly Bear. And Grizzly Bear have just recently made the news because of their support for presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. And they have just released some news that they are back in studio getting ready to put out a brand new record, or at least recording a brand new record. The first one in 5 or 6 years since a record called Shields. So the multi-instrumentalist in this band, he not only does backup vocals, but he plays a ton of stuff. And if I was to have one guest on the show, this is the guy. Look at his pedal board setup. He plays everything from reed instruments to bass, singing three-part harmonies and fiddling with all sorts of knobs. Coming up on the next episode, I am so excited to announce that we have Chris Taylor from Grizzly Bear making an appearance on the show. Again, can't thank you all enough for all of the support and the love and the shares. If I can ask one thing of you, give us a 5-star review or pass this show along to as many people as you possibly can. We've got great things that are happening. We're going to have Boss back in the fold very soon, where we will have not only some giveaways, but some special guests from their roster on the program and some representatives from Boss coming on the show to have a little chat with us too. So again, thanks again for the love. Pass the show along on Twitter, Facebook, any social media that you can. And we will be back with episode 11 of Knobs very soon. Brought to you by 44north.com.